A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 248. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. This is a 1999 co-production from Scottish Television, from the ITV network here in the UK, and DIC Entertainment, a US production company. So it's a sort of co-production, but it has that British flavour, which we'll get to. There were 26 25-minute animated episodes, and the concept is it pretty much does what it says in the title, Brian. Sherlock Holmes is indeed in the 22nd century when an old foe seems to return to baffle the current police force of that period.
Yes, absolutely. And this is a revived Sherlock Holmes who had been preserved from the early 20th century and rejuvenated, made young again, and takes the lead in this snappy children's show, this cartoon from the late 1990s.
Splendid stuff. Animated fun here on British Invaders.
Absolutely.
So, the setup. It starts with Inspector Beth Lestrade, plenty of familiar names as we go along, who works for New Scotland Yard in New London, and she is pursuing a rogue scientist, a geneticist to be precise. And she realizes that this strange criminal is being assisted by none other than a clone of Professor Moriarty, the greatest criminal mind of his generation. And she knows that in order to tackle Moriarty, she's going to need the help of none other than, well, as we've said, the rejuvenated Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century.
Yes, fortunately the body of Sherlock Holmes had been preserved in honey and preserved well enough that this 22nd century science team could revive him, and we see in honey that he is quite elderly, as he lived to be very elderly, but he is made young again in this process where he is revived. And they are often a series of adventures that are all based in one way or another on the original Conan Doyle stories.
Yes, lots of Conan Doyle connections as we go along, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Absolutely. So looking at the characters, as we said, we start with Inspector Beth Lestrade. She is voiced by Akiko Morrison. And Lestrade is a descendant of the original police inspector Lestrade, who was Holmes' contact in the original stories, of course. This Lestrade is a very different character, a tough, no-nonsense, street-smart police officer, lots of high-kicking and very, modern-style detective. Complete with the flying car that she drives or flies.
Yes, the 22nd century apparently is when we get the flying cars. So.
Of course.
Of course. And of course, we have to have Sherlock Holmes, voiced by the actor Jason Gray Stanford, the cloned and refreshed detective, but complete with all of his deductive capabilities and his wide experience in criminology. And with his familiar, or at least for this show, a familiar catchphrase, which he uses quite often, eyes and brains, which he will repeat several times when he explains his methods. And he's very soon donning familiar attire and taking up residence in his old rooms in Baker Street, which have been preserved as a Holmesian museum. So pretty much as he left them. And he seems to be, he's up to speed very quickly, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Watson, voiced by John Payne, is an interesting twist on the character. Initially, Lestrade has access to these robotic assistants, these sort of humanoid robots that can speak and understand speech and so on, but tend to be quite robotic. And this particular one is given John Watson's journals to study and decides to adopt the personality of Dr. John Watson and also adopts a mask which makes him look like Dr. Watson, and the clothing follows as well, of course. So we have a robotic version of Dr. Watson who fills in the role as you might expect.
Yes, the dignified John Watson as a robot. Splendid stuff.
It's an interesting twist. In some ways, it's quite far from the original, but in other ways, it hits it fairly closely.
And of course, for a police show, we need a superior officer who can shout at them and send them off on cases. This time we have Chief Inspector Grayson, voiced by William Payne. And he is Inspector Lestrade's rather shouty superior. He is based on the Chief Inspector Grayson that appeared in A Study in Scarlet. But as you pointed out beforehand, Brian, with Beth Lestrade being a sort of high-kicking action-type police inspector, Grayson, I think, is given more of the characteristics of the original book's Lestrade.
Yes, I think that's right, because you need someone on the police force who is very skeptical and cynical when it comes to Holmes, and he fills that out and has very little patience for Holmes and basically says to Lestrade, "You just take care of this guy and keep him out of my way." And Lestrade is more respectful of Holmes and teams up with him more closely than we would expect the original Lestrade to do. Professor James Moriarty, voiced by Richard Newman, is a clone of the greatest criminal mind of his century and becoming the greatest criminal mind of the 22nd century as well. The body of the original was frozen in ice at the foot of the Reichenbach Falls, allowing for the clone to be produced.
Yes, rather convenient that Moriarty's body was there in ice and survived into the 22nd century, and that allowed a Dr. Martin Fenwick, the rogue scientist, the geneticist I mentioned, who brings Moriarty back, or rather who clones Moriarty. He was voiced by the actor Ian James Corlett, and I believe Martin Fenwick is the only one of the main characters we've mentioned so far that isn't based on someone from the Conan Doyle stories. But I'm not by any means an expert Holmesian. I don't know. As far as I'm aware, he doesn't appear in the stories, Brian.
Yeah, I don't think so. He definitely has the sense of a strange new character who is, I think, sort of mutated or something, has a very strange look to him, and is this sort of mad scientist type character who often becomes Moriarty's sidekick.
Yes, and he does have that sort of cartoon, almost Scooby-Doo mad scientist look to him, and he is a recurring character.
Yes, for sure.
So, Holmes has been regenerated, rejuvenated. He's got all his old capabilities and skills, and it doesn't take him very long at all to find his feet in the new century. In fact, I believe he actually uses his deductive powers to work out exactly how he comes to be in the 22nd century. And he's soon in a familiar deerstalker hat and the long cloaked overcoat. And he is literally off and running, Brian.
Yes, from time to time we have him asking questions about the new century and things like this and things that he doesn't know about. But for the most part, he picks up things very quickly and he seems to be ready to go and familiar with the new century most of the time. One thing that he does not have is the skill to drive or fly one of these flying cars. It's always someone else doing that.
Yes, but for everything else, he is Sherlock Holmes after all, so he can work it out.
Yes, absolutely. And with Watson and Lestrade at his side, he is off on a whole series of tricky cases, you know, in a nicely episodic way, of course. And they do have the flying car that usually Watson is driving and Lestrade drives one as well. And all sorts of things with sort of modern up-to-date technology with computers and the like. And also futuristic technology. And we've mentioned cloning. There are lots of things with genetic manipulation and cloning that come up at various times in the series. They also have this cryptognosis technique, which removes criminal impulses from the brains of convicted prisoners. And this is something that comes up early in the series and is then touched on from time to time later on.
Yes, interestingly, you know, perhaps the ethics of that are not considered in a children's show, as we probably wouldn't expect them to. But for a podcast like ours, where we've talked about mind control and mind washing in various other shows, I just thought it was an interesting little aside that they have this cryptognosis technique, although it doesn't seem to be a perfect science because they often have criminals who are reoffending or where the technique doesn't appear to have worked.
Yeah, this being the type of show it was, they couldn't deal with those ethical questions, which in a way is too bad because there are interesting questions there, and the way it was portrayed, it is quite questionable. But what they did deal with is the idea that the technology and the idea of messing with people's brains is somewhat flawed, and that conditioning sometimes fails or can be reversed or changed by other criminals. So there are some interesting things related to it that are dealt with from time to time.
Okay. As I suggested, for the most part, Holmes, of course, relies on his familiar skills of detection and deduction, often with the catchphrase for this series of eyes and brains, Watson, eyes and brains, rather than we don't, I think, hear the elementary, my dear Watson, that we might expect from Sherlock Holmes. And again, I'm not sure, is the eyes and brains phrase something that recurs in the stories? Do you know, Brian?
No, I don't think so. It is quite a long time since I've read the Sherlock Holmes stories. But yeah, that one isn't one that I'm familiar with. I was pleased that they don't do too much with the elementary Dear Watson, which is not from the Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes. It was added later. They do have it in the opening titles, but they don't use it in the episodes themselves much at all, which is something that I thought was nice that they avoided that little cliche.
Okay. Eyes and brains does feel like something from this show, but if your Holmesian knowledge is better, then please do let us know.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain it wasn't a catchphrase. It's definitely a catchphrase in this show. It may have shown up the odd time in the books, but it's been made a catchphrase, which is sort of a more modern thing to want to do, to have a catchphrase. If they're going to have one, I think that one isn't too bad, the way that the show is set up and for Holmes and so on.
Okay. As we say, Holmes seems to be working for New Scotland Yard most of the time. He is occasionally sort of approached by private clients, but for the most part, he's working with Lestrade and reporting to Chief Inspector Grayson, who, as you say, is a slightly more sceptical presence and who Holmes obviously has to demonstrate his abilities to from time to time.
Yes, absolutely. And we get Holmes investigating spectral hounds on the moon. We get vampires in Sussex, the Redheaded League, and the Sign of Four, which is back on the moon again. And every story in this is, in one way or another, based on an original Conan Doyle story. Some of them are not very closely related at all, but there is a specific story in mind in each case.
Yes, I believe sometimes it's just the title, and then other times, as we'll talk about perhaps in our next episode, they stick very closely to the original story.
Absolutely. So getting into our production notes, Sherlock Holmes was created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who lived from 1859 to 1930.
And of course, Holmes is one of the most famous and popular fictional characters of all time, who first appeared in the novel A Study in Scarlet, which we've already referenced. That was one of four novels featuring Holmes, but of course, his canon extends well beyond that, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There were a number of short stories. In fact, I believe 57 short stories that appeared in the Strand magazine and were later collected into five anthology books. And of course, there are complete Holmes anthologies and all sorts of things available at this point. But those short stories were a very important, if not maybe even the most important, part of the Holmes canon, as it's referred to, the stories written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yes, and another little sort of reference to the importance of magazine publications in the Victorian era, which we've talked about before, most recently when we did The Picture of Dorian Gray. But yes, the success of the Strand magazine publications in building the Sherlock Holmes legend, I think, can't be underestimated.
Yeah, serializing novels and doing short stories that were either serialized or one-off in magazines were a huge part of the culture at that point. And it seems that Sherlock Holmes is the most filmed character in the history of film and television. For the number of appearances a character has, Holmes seems to be number one. We have had some competitors for that that we've talked about previously. Dracula is very high on the list. Frankenstein's monster or Frankenstein's creature is also very high on the list. But it seems that Sherlock Holmes is actually number one.
Yes, and of course, if we started to discuss his appearances in other media, we'd be here all day, I think, Brian.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a tremendous number of things and all sorts of things that have followed along behind that original canon.
So let's focus on Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century, which, as we've said, is a UK-US co-production between ITV's Scottish TV and the American company DIC, which were later known as the Cookie Jar Company. The two companies had already worked together on other shows, although I'm not sure which animated shows they were. An interesting little snippet that a Scottish TV executive called Sandy Ross apparently came up with the idea of Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century while skiing in Aspen, which is nice work if you can get it, I suppose, Brian.
Yes, indeed. I think this is the first show we're covering that is a Scottish TV production. We have covered some things from BBC Scotland before, but for Scottish TV, the ITV branch from Scotland, I think this is the first one that we're covering.
I think that's right, yes. I haven't heard them referenced before.
Multiple writers took on the different episodes with titles and plot ideas always taken from Conan Doyle's stories, and in some cases they were adapting things quite faithfully, and other things it was just a title and an idea.
Yes, lots of writers. The name that stood out to me as a comics fan is American comics legend Marv Wolfman, who wrote one episode, The Empty House. And as we'll talk about probably in our next episode, that was one story that stuck fairly closely to the Conan Doyle original.
Yes, that one was pretty much an adaptation. What work is Wolfman known for?
Particularly for Crisis on Infinite Earths, the great DC sort of multiple crossover that revamped the DC universe in the 80s. But before that, Teen Titans. And for Marvel, he did The Tomb of Dracula. And I believe he created the character Blade, that was one of the first successful Marvel movies in recent times, before the real sort of Marvel cinematic universe took off.
That is quite a resume of comics, for sure.
And he's still active and still writing, and I met him earlier this year at the London Super Comic Con.
Oh, very good. Excellent. Robert Brousseau and Scott Hemming took on directorial duties for this. Both of them were directing various episodes. The animation for it has some anime influence to it, although it's sort of a mix of different styles. It was produced in an American animation studio, and it was a 2D, 3D mix, so a mixture of essentially hand-drawn animation than computer animation, which is something that was starting to become fairly common in this time period for animated shows. And it ended up with a look that I think works pretty well.
Okay. It's got a very catchy theme tune for a kids' show, which was apparently composed and performed by a group known as Raw. I can't find any more information about them than that. And then incidental music for the episodes written by Eric Ullman. It's probably worth going to see the title sequence and listening to the theme tune, although I do warn you, it can get stuck in your head a bit, can't it, Brian?
Yes, it is one that's a little bit odd.
Yeah, and repetitive.
Yes, that's true too. I did like the moments where they used the theme from the title theme music in the incidental music. I thought that was done nicely. Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd Century was broadcast on Fox Kids and on Scottish TV, and of course the rest of the ITV network. Series 1 had 17 episodes and went out in 1999 and 2000. Series 2 had 9 episodes and it was broadcast in 2001.
Okay, so let's talk about how you can watch the show yourself. Let's turn to availability, and we're reversing the order that we normally do. It's Region 1 first, Brian.
Yes, Region 1 has a DVD release with all 26 episodes squeezed into 3 discs, and I think there's an earlier release with only some of the episodes kicking around as well, but the one that you want, I'd say, is the full 26-episode 3-disc set. The only bonus features are some sample episodes from other Cookie Jar animated shows. It sells for about $19 on Amazon.com. You can also get it on Amazon Instant if you want to use the streaming approach. It's $2 per episode or $17 for the whole run.
Okay. Meanwhile, over here in Region 2, there is no Region 2 DVD release. I know it's a while since I've said that, Brian.
It happens occasionally, but yeah, unfortunately no release in Region 2 on this one.
So you will need to get the Region 1 import, which you can buy on Amazon.co.uk for about £17 currently. And obviously you'll need to be able to play a Region 1 DVD on your machine or on your computer. So we're stuck with the import version. You will find some of the episodes on YouTube, but as ever, we do encourage people, if you want to get into this show, to invest in the DVDs to support their production so that we can keep getting DVD releases of the TV shows that we enjoy.
It may actually be cheaper to import the Region 1 release from Amazon.com, even if you're in the UK. The import fees and shipping on those types of things are actually not that high, so it's pretty close there, but it may actually be a little cheaper.
Okay, worth looking at. And, of course, worth coming back to us next time, because we've got to get into some of the cases in detail, compare them as best we can to the original Conan Doyle stories. And, of course, we get to review, rate and recommend Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century. So some stuff to get to, quite a package for part two of our discussion, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group there. And there may indeed be a chance to win a Region 1 DVD set of Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century coming up.
Yes, you won't be too surprised to hear there's a chance to win my set. So do pay attention, listen closely, because there will be a question. And of course, please come and join us on the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com. Join in the fun and games, and it's literal games, because there are there's a competitive part to the network where you can take part and win points and so on. We are Mondays and Tuesdays, but there are plenty of other great shows. So come and join the fun and check out the home of good geeky listening on vognetwork.com.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.